What's up? It's Delaney, and I'd love to invite you to become an honorary co-host of the Self-Helpless podcast. Do you want to pick episode topics and guests? Done. Want to surprise your loved ones with shout-outs on the show for a birthday, project launch, a much-needed divorce? Whatever you're up to, would love to be a part of the celebration. Get your favorite and least favorite quotes featured on the podcast, submit questions for our special guests, and find lots more new features and surprises at patreon.com/selfhelpless. You'll also get added to our Patreon Insider email list to easily redeem rewards via a quick email reply. Because we know hanging out on Patreon isn't everyone's thing. You can also opt out of emails if you prefer to be a silent supporter of the show. And don't worry, we do not Scrooge McDuck these contributions. 100% of proceeds go directly to operating expenses that make this weekly podcast possible and available to all. Learn more at patreon.com/selfhelpless or simply click the link in this episode's description. Thank you for helping me fill the void of being the last standing host of the Self-Helpless podcast. Thank you so much.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
I'm no good at taking good advice, and I'm self-careless, so don't tell me twice that lately I've been so stuck in my head that I forget just about everything my therapist said. Maybe I'm self-helpless. Maybe I'm self-helpless. Maybe I'm self-helpless. Maybe we are all self-helpless.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Self-Helpless podcast. I'm Kelsey Cook.
I'm Delaney Fisher.
And today we are doing an episode all about grief, and we are joined by such an amazing guest. We have on Krista St. Germain. She is a master certified life coach, post-traumatic growth and grief expert, widow mom, and host of the Widowed Mom podcast. She's been featured all over Psychology Today, Medium, Thrive Global. And oh man, if I sound somber, it's because we just finished interviewing her. And it's just, I think, one of the more powerful episodes we've ever done, because she was so vulnerable and willing to share what she's gone through, and then just was incredibly helpful in how we can all comfort ourselves through grief, maybe some of the misconceptions with the five stages of grief, mm-hmm. just so many things. I shared some stuff about my mom.
Yeah, she was so great, and I really liked her simple tips, because I think the tips have to be simple when you are grieving, because your yeah. energy and motivation is so zapped that you can really only focus on like one little thing at a time. And so I really enjoyed her simplification of things that you can kind of do, or, even the method that she shared just with like two things to consider, two categories to consider, was super helpful. And yeah, I got a lot out of this episode, and it's really interesting how we all of us experience grief, and we're all going to be experiencing different types of grief throughout our entire lives.
Yeah,
forever.
Yeah, yeah. So make sure that if you do resonate with the things we talk about today, check out her podcast, the Widowed Mom podcast, and before we get into the interview with Krista, just a heads up, I've got a couple more tour dates for this year and then so many more for next year. Oh my gosh. I am going to be in Boston December 1st and 2nd. I'm going to be in Tampa December 7th through the 9th. And then I know I don't have it all listed in front of me right now, but it's like San Diego in January, Philly, New Jersey, Minneapolis. Just a ton of places, guys. So please go to kelseycook.com and get those tour date tickets.
Yeah, awesome. And if you want to listen to my other podcast, Career Crush, you can find it at DelaneyFisher.com. It's a private show, but it's completely free. And you can just join the email list to be, you know, have access to like basically a free global community, free events, free resources, all kinds of stuff. And speaking of grief, you know, we talk a lot about grief on that podcast because there's so much grief with transitioning careers or job loss or career loss or whatever it is, losing your identity and not knowing what to do next. So this episode definitely kind of relates to that as well, trying to find your place in the world where you can earn a living, but also do something meaningful and just, yeah, all of that. So would love to have you, DelaneyFisher.com.
Amazing. Yes. All right, guys, enjoy our episode, our interview with Krista.
Krista, thank you so much for being here today. We are thrilled to have you on to talk about this super important topic.
Thank you so much. Like, it is so important. And like I said, you know, before we started recording, I'm always just so thrilled when anyone wants to talk about grief.
Which is not something so you hear often.
I know.
And to hear a lot.
Not something I ever even imagined would come out of my own mouth.
Yeah, I have but to correct you. I believe you said that you were pumped to talk about grief.
I did. You're right. It's true.
And I just love it. It's a lot of football energy and I didn't expect it with this topic, but it makes, and you know what? I think it makes people who are going through grief feel less self-conscious about it. Like, I'm already so excited to hear your perspective because I know we'll get into a lot of this, but anyway, why don't we start with your favorite or least favorite quote, which you gave us a preview of before, and we're very excited to dive into it.
Yeah, I literally want to vomit every time I hear it, but it, and it's everywhere, right? My least favorite quote is "Time heals all wounds."
Yes, I hate that one too. Damn
it.
I've always hated that quote too. I'm so glad you feel that way.
I may have found my people
here. Yes, welcome.
Yeah, welcome. Can you expand why you hate it?
First of all, I can tell you that I see the damage it does, you know, I work with widowed moms primarily, and so many of them, like I did, we buy into this idea that all we have to do is let time pass. Mm-hmm. And then we suffer so much more because we don't learn how to support ourselves. We just basically spend time avoiding and then simultaneously judging ourselves for it, which is probably a whole different thing. But I just find it's just not helpful advice. And it's so old. I've tried to find the origin of it. It just seems to go so far back and we've bought into it. Hook, line, and sinker. Not helpful.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Question about this quote, because do you feel like it's not helpful because time does not heal all wounds and the grief process is not linear, like you're going to wake up in 20 years and not feel sad about certain things? Or do you also feel like it's what you do in that time that can help you process grief?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's nuanced. So I do think we're coming at it with this false understanding that grief ends in the first place. So our target is inaccurate. Yeah. For most of us, right? Because we have bought into the five stages. That is the only grief theory we know. And, you know, we're kind of misusing it. We're not using it the way it was originally intended anyway. So we tend to think that, you know, acceptance is the fifth stage of grief. Therefore, when we get to acceptance, we're done, which is not at all how grief works, right? Grief never ends. It's just the natural human response to loss. And we can't undo the loss. We're always going to have a response. So it might change over time and we might integrate the grief into our, you know, experience. And we certainly don't have to be sad all the time, but that doesn't mean that grief ends. So I think it's flawed from that aspect. And then if we are under the assumption that all we need to do is hold on, we don't develop healthy coping mechanisms. We don't learn how to, you know, feel our feelings. We just learn how to avoid things. I do think there is something powerful that is happening as time passes, right? Which is what the brain is doing in terms of it relearning the new environment that we're in. So, you know, for me, you feel a little bit crazy if you don't know this. Like, I remember times where I would pick up my phone and I would go to text my husband after he died. Like, I know I can't text him. Right. Mm-hmm. But you pick up your phone and it takes a minute before you remember. Or I would hear the garage door open And I would briefly think, oh, he's home, you know? And then I would be like, you idiot, like, he's not home. You know, he died. But there is that time period, and it's different for everyone, where our brain has not relearned the new reality, and it's not accurately predicting. It's predicting based on what it knew, which there's so much importance to that, especially when it comes to a relationship that is so significant. If we didn't have that ability to predict where our person was and when we would see them next, we would probably feel scared all the time, right? So it's important that we have that. But it does take time for our brain to have enough exposures to the new reality so that it starts making accurate predictions. And so if we don't know that aspect, it's pretty easy to feel like you've lost your mind.
Yeah.
Mm. Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
I have so many questions for you.
Yeah. Let's go.
So, are you, sorry, my dog's barking. We'll edit that out.
I have two podcast dogs. That's what I call them.
That is a great.
They only bark when we're recording podcasts.
Oh,
yes.
You really have found your people. We feel like we found you too. Are you comfortable sharing, if your husband's passing was sudden, if it was something you knew was going to happen, and maybe some more details around that?
For sure. No, I definitely didn't know it was happening. So we had gone on a trip and we had driven separately and we were coming back from the trip and we're almost home, and I had a flat tire and I pulled over on the side of the road and he pulled up behind me, hazard lights on. And I said, you know, let's call AAA. And he said, no, baby, let's not. It won't take me that long. I'll just change the tire. It'll be faster that way. And so I was standing on the side of the road texting my daughter, who at the time was 12. And I was just letting her know that we would be late because she was on the same trip we were on, but she rode the bus back. And a driver, as I'm standing there, who we didn't know this at the time, obviously, but later found out had meth and alcohol in his system. It's 5:30, daylight on a Sunday. Hazard lights on, did not see us, did not brake, just crashed right into the back of his car and trapped him in between his car and my car. And so I went from truly feeling like my life was perfect, because this was my second marriage, first marriage down in flames. This was like the redemption story of like, true love is possible. It can be good again. And that, you know, we'd only been married a few months, and then just whoosh, just, you know, within a day, it went downhill from there, gone. So no, I was not prepared. And that's why I'm so passionate about what I do right now, is because I came into my own grief experience buying into a lot of this time heals and not understanding grief and not knowing what to expect. And so if I can save people the suffering and teach them accurate, you know, tools and updated information about grief, then that makes me feel really good.
Wow. Thank you for sharing that. Seriously. I mean, where do you even fucking begin to go on? Yeah. Like, what were your first steps? Like, what happened for you next?
I mean, you know, first of all, it was just, you just feel like, or at least I did, I felt like kind of a walking zombie. But I really quickly went back to the therapist that helped me through the divorce, right? I still had her in my phone. In fact, my cousin had the same therapist. I think she texted her, I texted her. Like, we were making that appointment happen rather quickly. And in those early days, I just needed to just be in a space where I could talk about it, because it didn't feel real. You know, there's just so much to process and so much to just get out. And I remember being particularly concerned about upsetting other people in my environment. I didn't want to be honest around my kids. You know, I felt like I needed to be strong for them. I didn't really have anybody that I felt like I could really talk to completely freely except my therapist. And so that's what I did in the early days, was just talk about it to her, journal. I did a lot of journaling, and I would write to him mostly.
Yeah.
On my back porch with coffee.
I feel like I don't, you know how sometimes when you go to say, I'm so sorry, it, you almost stop yourself because you're like, that just is not even close to enough.
Yeah.
In word form of what I wish I could express to you. You are so amazing that you are like capable of helping others and like just being able to talk about this. I'm so amazed by you. Thank you so much for coming on and just like being willing to talk about this.
Yeah. Thank you. And listen, I do grief work for a living and it's still awkward for me to like, to know what to say. Yeah. So
yeah,
I so get that. And also I get as much out of this as I give, right? Yeah. This work feels good to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. When did you start helping other people? Like, how did it lead there? And do you ever find that it can be re-traumatizing, or do you feel like it's always healing to do that work?
I know everyone has a different experience of that. For me, it never feels re-traumatizing. It might bring up aspects that I want to give more thought to, but it never feels heavy to me. The way I got into it was, as I think often happens when you have a major loss, you kind of stop and go, wait, why am I here on this planet? Like, mm-hmm. if it can be taken that quickly, do I want to do what I'm doing? Mm. Yeah. And the answer was no, right? So he and I worked together, and he was an engineer. He was obsessed with airplanes, always had been, right? I was not. It paid the bills, and I liked it. I didn't dislike it, but it was never something I felt really passionate about. And so I started talking about it with my therapist of like, what do I want to do with the rest of my life? I'm 40. This isn't, you know, this feels financially secure, but it doesn't feel really emotionally rewarding. And she was like, you should be a therapist. Okay. But yeah. That kind of made sense to me, honestly, because I bet you're probably like this too, where people just come to you no matter what environment you're in. You just, you know, people want to talk to you. And that's how it was always for me. And so I really entertained that quite deeply for a while and became, she had it all planned. She was like, you can become a therapist. I'll help you get into an MFT program. Then you can come and work for me. And then when I retire, you can buy my practice. And like, she had it all planned out. And I kind of liked that idea until I was waiting for the MFT program to start. I had like one undergraduate credit that I needed, abnormal psych. I was taking that class and I was waiting the 8 months before the program started. And I happened to enroll myself in a life coaching program, and it had nothing to do with grief. It just happened to be this life coach that I'd been following, and she launched a program and I decided to join. And what started happening as I watched her coach other people, even though I really wasn't even getting coached myself, the things I was learning just kind of light bulbs started going on, and it just felt so tangible and practical and was moving the needle so much more than anything I had experienced before that I started getting interested in that. And then I decided, oh, actually, I think even though therapy seems safer, because I'm from Kansas, like, you know, like we, that, you know, nobody knew what life coaching was at that point in time. And if anything, we're very skeptical of it. So, but I decided, I think that's actually what I want to do. And at that time, I wasn't intending to do grief. I hadn't done enough of my own work. I just knew I didn't want to be in the same corporate job I was in, and I want to do something more helpful. And so I enrolled in that program, started getting certified, got certified, and then eventually reached the place where it didn't make sense to do anything else but work with widowed moms. Mm. Right. But that was a journey. That wasn't an overnight epiphany.
Yeah.
Right.
Do you find that there are other people that reach out to you who are interested in your work that are not necessarily widowed moms, but are going through some other form of grief?
All the time. Okay. All the time. In fact, I just got back from an event that I was at, you know, and I kept hearing, people kept coming up to me and saying, I am not a widow, but I listened to your podcast and it has helped me so much. for other grief, you know, related experiences, yeah. because we all have grief. We all have it. We don't get off of this planet without having it. And we're also misinformed that even though, you know, I am kind of talking to a niched audience typically, mm-hmm. it's just so universally needed.
Right.
And yeah. so I think people find a lot of respite and comfort hearing me talk about it.
Yeah. yeah. What do you agree with or disagree with when it comes to like the five stages of grief that we've all heard about like a million times? Would you change anything?
Oh, 100%. So yeah. I agree that the five stages was really valuable in the time that it was created, right? I agree that the conversations that it sparked because nobody was really talking about it in the way that Elizabeth Kubler-Ross and David Kessler did really was necessary and valuable. But I also just think people don't understand the context that, you know, most people assume it's about grief and they don't understand that really that work was about hospice patients initially, mm-hmm. right? That was the study of people coming to terms with a terminal diagnosis. I'll deny and then I'll get angry and then I'll bargain right. and then I get, right, acceptance, denial, all that. So then later that work was then applied to on grief and grieving. So it was on death and dying first and then on grief and grieving. And even Elizabeth Kubler-Ross later in her life, and especially on her deathbed, deeply regretted how people took her work and made it this linear staged thing. I mean, she was basically trying to say, hey, here's what it can look like. And then everybody else saw that and went, oh, here's what it should look like.
Yeah. People took it like a recipe card. Like right. you do this and then you do this and you do this. And it was
yeah, right. like a formula. And yeah. and so then people use it against themselves. Instead of saying, you know, grief is as unique as your fingerprint and you can't do it wrong, right? And it doesn't end. We went with, I don't know, am I angry enough? Is this denial? Like, what, am I at acceptance? And so it's literally like fingernails on a chalkboard for me sometimes. I was listening to a reporter not so long ago, but it was when the fires happened in Lahaina mm-hmm. in Maui, and he was on the ground and he said something like, well, I'm on the ground and I'm seeing the five stages of grief everywhere. And I just like, stop perpetuating this. It is one way of thinking of grief, but it is not representative. And there are so many other ways of, you know, thinking about grief that have happened since, you know, I was like, I'm 47. I think I was 4 when the five stages was created. It's been a few decades.
Right.
Yeah. What are some of the ones that you feel like could give more value to people?
My favorite is, I shouldn't say favorite. The one I find to be particularly useful for people is the dual process model of grief, which is essentially the idea that you can take all activities after a loss and divide them up into two buckets. So you can take, so some activities are going to be loss oriented, meaning thinking about the loss, relating to the loss, feeling the feelings of the loss, dealing with the loss, like loss related, that's one bucket. And then the other bucket is restoration. So things that are not related to the loss, which means taking a break from the loss, you know, doing anything but the loss. It doesn't mean living life as though the loss didn't happen, because that's not possible, but it means laughing. It means Netflix binges. It means, you know, living your life. And so often people come to me so worried about doing grief right, or thinking that there's a way to do it wrong. And they're very focused on the loss related activities. And then when they notice themselves drifting into the restorative activities, which of course they aren't labeling as that, but then they tend to judge themselves and tell themselves that like, oh, I shouldn't be avoiding this, or it's not okay for me to laugh, or, you know, but yeah. really what the dual process model says is that it's the intentional oscillation back and forth, right? We think about our loss, we deal with it, and then we take a break from it.
Yeah.
And we go back and forth, and that's the goodness, right? So let's schedule the Netflix binges. Let's not give ourselves a hard time about that. Let's put time in our calendar where we give ourselves permission to laugh and think about other things and find hobbies and connections and things that are unrelated. Yeah. I find that one to be particularly useful.
Man, I can't tell you how helpful this is. From everything you're saying is kind of what I was maybe hoping to get out of one of my recent therapy sessions, because I my mom was diagnosed with a really progressive form of dementia almost 3 years ago. And they initially said that she had 6 weeks to live. And now it's been much longer. And I have had such a hard time just psychologically trying to figure out how to process something like this, because my mom is like my whole world. I've been so close with her my whole life. And it is so traumatizing to watch the person you loved so much be passing away over time, where I lost my version of my mom almost 3 years ago. But there is still, like, I technically can still call the nursing home and talk to her, but it's like not, it's not her. It's like a very different type of conversation. And yeah, there are days where, like, that's why I was asking you, like, I'm so amazed at your strength, because there are so many days where I'm like, I don't know how I'm not in an insane asylum yet, because some days it just feels like too much to handle.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, I can only imagine how, you know, there's so many different types of grief too. I think, like, we tend to think of just grief as like, you're either in it or you're not. Yeah. But I think it's helpful when you think about grief. Grief has different flavors almost, right? So there's like the anticipatory grief of, you know, knowing that she's going to die.
Yeah.
Right. And anticipating that. And then there's like the ambiguous grief of like all of the elements of it that are happening right now, even though the loss hasn't happened.
Yeah.
Right. And it's like, and then there's like all this, if I'm only imagining, so I don't want to speak for you, but I'm imagining, you know, what I experienced as secondary losses after my husband died, right? So the primary loss was his death. And then any loss in the future related to his death is all the secondary losses. Like, you're probably experiencing, you'll still have secondary losses after she dies, but yet you're already having all of these secondary losses and she hasn't died. Like, there's so much.
It's so much. Like, feels like there's not enough time in the world to process it, and not enough energy in the world to process it. So I think what you just said, remind me the name of it. Dual
process model.
Dual process. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Strobe and shoot.
Okay. That is really helpful for me to know, because I have had a hard time trying to organize it, like trying to feel these feelings on a daily basis, but do my job and maintain my relationships and take care of myself. Sorry. didn't wear makeup this episode, because I figured. But yeah, it's just, it's so hard. And there is a lot of guilt in doing restorative things, but you have to.
You have to. Yeah. And if you can just keep, when your brain jumps up and tries to judge you and make you feel guilty about it, to remind yourself, okay, no, this is actually, this is taking care of myself. Like, I have to do this.
Yeah. And it's what my mom would want. I have to tell myself that a lot too, which is hard to really have sink in. But I know she wouldn't want me to like make myself sick, which is, it's just hard. It's, Sorry, Del. I feel like you had a question.
No, thanks for sharing. I was going to say, if you're able to kind of expand on the relationship between like the guilt aspect of it, between like, you know, the dual process system, like I'd imagine, when that guilt comes up, like, why does it come up, and how can you kind of help people deal with it? Like, what do you share with your clients to tell themselves to be able to take care of themselves and have like fun again and laugh again?
Yeah. I usually try, when guilt comes up, I usually try to help them find the sentence in their mind that's causing it. Right. So what is the sentence? So it very often has the word should in it.
Yeah.
Or there's going to be some judgmental aspect of it. So this must mean I'm not a good daughter. You know, this must mean I didn't love them enough, or I'm not committed enough, or, you know, something along those lines. Or it will have a should in it, like, I should have tried harder, or I should be trying harder. right? Or I should be stronger, or I'm, you know, some sort of, we can isolate it. We can find it. And then once we find it, we can question it. Mm. Right. Because a thought shows up doesn't mean we need to keep believing it. We can question it. And sometimes what I find after the fact, like after a loss, we're still feeling guilty. Sometimes it can be a way that we don't even know we're trying to protect ourselves from feeling something that's even less desirable than guilt, which would typically be like powerlessness or sadness, right? So if you use an emotional scale where you'll see these, sometimes you can Google emotional scale, you'll find one where they've lined up emotions with in order of desirability for humans, which, and also vibration. So the lowest ones will be like powerlessness and despair. And then guilt and anger are actually higher, right? And then you go all the way up to the top and then you find like joy, ecstasy. But there's this full range. Mm. And so sometimes we'll get stuck in thought loops or ways of, generating guilt, generating anger, generating blame, similar families like cousins. And as long as we stay there, what we don't have to feel is deep sadness or powerlessness or despair. Does that make sense? Yeah.
That was
so we can understand why we would want to do that.
Yeah. That actually was almost exactly another thing I talked about in therapy recently, was that I have had a lot of anger coming up lately about my mom having dementia. And my therapist was talking about that can be used as this kind of protective barrier between you and the sadness. Because when I let myself fully feel that sadness, it feels bottomless. And that's really terrifying, where you feel like you'll never stop crying.
Yeah.
And I think that is so much scarier than just feeling angry. Feeling angry has a little bit more power to it. But
yeah, that's where this, you know, the expression mad is the guardian of sad.
Oh, I hadn't heard that before.
Comes from, right? Yeah. And I also think for some people, depending on, you know, the paradigm through which they see the world, can be really, it can make you feel like gravity is gone, where you thought, a lot of us thought, good things happen to good people.
Yeah.
And then we're like, but wait a minute. Right. And if I have someone or something to blame, then I can hold on to that familiar way of seeing the world. If I don't, what does that mean for me? Now that familiar way of seeing the world, I have to let it go and I have to find a new way. That's scary too.
Oh, that's so interesting. That's so interesting. Krista, how has your grieving changed? Like, how many years ago was your loss? And like, what looks different? What looks the same? If you're able to share.
Yeah. So it was August 1st of 2016. So it's been about 7 years, a little over 7 years. It's changed in that, I mean, obviously it's way less emotionally intense. You know, in the beginning, for most people in acute grief, it does not feel predictable. You just feel like you're on a roller coaster. At one moment you're numb, the next moment you can't get out of bed. Like, it's, you know, not universal, of course, but wild swings. And your whole body is impacted. Your hormones are going nuts, right? You're not sleeping as well, which has been messing with your hormones. Your brain is actively trying to find them. So you're feeling yearning. You're having counterfactual thinking of, you know, woulda, coulda, shoulda thoughts. And like, you're, we call it grief fog or widow fog, but your prefrontal cortex, it already has a very limited bandwidth anyway, right? The highest part of our brain that makes decisions. And it is way taxed because of all of the chaos that's happening in our system. So we're not even remembering things that we would otherwise normally remember. Like, you go to the grocery store and you buy toilet paper again, and you already have a mountain of it at home, right? You forget your kids at daycare. Like, those are the kinds of things that happen in grief. So for me, in the early days, it was like that, where it was like some days I was a walking, functioning zombie, and then other days I was in a complete puddle. And it's just a weird, crazy ride in the beginning. And then it kind of got to the place where it started to level out a little bit, in that I felt like I was back to functioning, and I went back to work, and I could do work again. And then that's when people start saying things like, oh, you're so strong and you're doing so great. And you kind of understand why they're saying that, because from the outside, you do look like you're doing pretty good because the kids are getting where they need to be and you're showered and, you know, like you look like you're functioning. But on the inside, you don't feel good. You feel empty and hollow and robotic. And you're like, what was happening in the back of my head was, okay, like we can do this for the kids. We're probably never going to be happy again, really happy again. Like we've had our shot. We're just going to have to get used to this new normal and just be grateful for what we had. Those were the thoughts I had in that place. I call that now, I didn't have a term for it then, but I've seen it so many times. I call it a grief plateau, where it's like, we're out of acute grief. Not that I want to give the impression that it's linear. I really, really don't, but it's just this like mediocre place. That's where it really breaks my heart when I see people assume that that's all that is available to them, right? They go, oh, well, I've heard of the new normal, so this must be it. And then they stop there and just, but with this resignation of like the loss happened and therefore, and they listen to the stories that used to be in my mind, which is you should just be happy for what you had. It's probably never going to be as good as it once was. You're probably never going to find anybody that will love you like that, right? Whereas now I feel like I am in that place where I have thoughtfully aligned my life with what I value, which is post-traumatic growth, right? Which is not to say I'm grateful that he died. I am definitely not. I don't ever want to be grateful that he died. I don't want to be happy that he died, right? But I don't argue with it anymore. I've decided who I want to be given that it happened. I've made choices accordingly, right? I've taken what I wanted to take from that part of my life. And I keep applying it to, you know, for instance, I don't work in the place that I didn't really love. You know, I do something that is what I want to do. I don't stay in relationships that don't feel good to me. You know, I'm more authentic in the way that I show up in the world and what I want to do. I feel less afraid of what other people might think of me than I probably ever have in my whole life. So it feels to me like I've integrated that experience, and I still get sad, by the way. Sometimes things will happen. Like my stepmother was in the hospital a couple of weeks ago and having some surgery, and I have still not been back to that hospital where ultimately he died. And I was like, okay, we're going to have a grief grenade. This is like, you know, this is, we're going to have to deal with this now. We haven't had to deal with this yet. So there are still things, you know, that catch me off guard, surprise me, times that I'm sad. I'm just much better at supporting myself through those times now. I feel like I have the tools that I didn't have in the early days.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Has there ever been any instinct in you since losing your husband of feeling afraid to love not just new people in your life, but like the people that you currently love, your kids, your family members? Is there like a heightened fear of losing them? Because that's something I have felt since my mom being diagnosed. It's like, oh my God, I can't go through this again.
Yeah. Yeah. I wouldn't say there was a heightened fear of loving them, but definitely of losing them.
Yeah.
And for sure of getting in new relationships too. And I think it's really common and also so fascinating, because when you really stop and think about it, the emotions that we experience in grief, there might be different flavors or versions of them in a new grief experience, but really it's like our brain is so focused on protecting us from potential danger, it doesn't give us credit for the danger we already got through.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? We're like, that could be so bad. Forget about the fact that you already handled something almost exactly like it.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, but I think that's negativity bias at work. Yeah. Is protect, keep yourself from danger. And so that's what I see happen a lot of times too. I call it the stagnation zone. Remember, I was talking about that scale. If you line up all the emotions from kind of bottom to top, what I find is that a lot of us then, after an intense emotional experience like that, is we start, our band of comfort starts to shrink, right? So we want to avoid the negative, quote unquote, negative emotion. So we stop taking new risks. Like we stop putting ourselves out there. We are successfully able to avoid through inaction or different action some of those intense emotions. But then what also happens, because we aren't really, and this can even happen in an existing relationship, right? If you're terrified of losing it, then as you're in it, you're not really in it.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So yes, you are maybe avoiding some of the negative, but then also you're avoiding the good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so you end up with that stagnation stuff in the middle, which is not awful, but it's not great. It's just like mediocre.
Mm. Yeah. Were there any self-care things you did during your, both that acute time and more that plateau time that helped you with your hormones, that helped you just to like get to a more balanced place in your body? Mm-hmm.
I don't think I knew anything about what was going on with me hormonally at the time. Mm-hmm. I just didn't have the awareness. So if I did anything, it wasn't conscious or intentional. Okay. But some of the things that I later look back at and think did help me, for sure, I gave myself, for me, this really helped, a lot of time on my back porch. For me, my back porch in the old house that I used to live in, I would go out there barefoot. Mm-hmm. And so I think I didn't really understand it now then, but I think I was kind of grounding at the time. And I was in nature because there was nothing behind me. It was kind of a unique little piece of property. And just to be in a space where I could look at flowers and watch birds and breathe. And not have a kid asking for something or, you know, a demand being placed on me, and giving myself that gift of time. And then I would go back and I would write a lot to him. And that was really, really helpful to me. I got a weighted blanket.
Yeah.
I think that helped
me. We love weighted blankets on this.
Yeah. And that was like in the early days of weighted blankets. I've got one that was like pretty much too heavy. I slept with a big stuffed animal. Mm-hmm. I would put pillows all around myself. Those are the things I consciously did, you know, and I didn't force myself to do things that I didn't feel ready for, even though I really was concerned about what other people would think. You know, when I went back to work, it was because I wanted to go back. It wasn't because I felt like I should. I had to really slow myself down.
Yeah.
But you know, the basics, honestly. Water, trying to sleep, decent nutrition, those things, they're so valuable.
Yeah.
How do you feel about being in a romantic relationship in the future, or at some point, or maybe you are now, I don't know. Do you feel like that person would have to understand what I've been through and kind of been through it themselves? Are you just terrified? Like, what's the point? Where do you stand on that?
Yeah. So I am in one, and I waited for about 3.5 years or so before I started dating. And by the time I started dating, I just decided I had gotten myself to a place where I realized that I was responsible for my satisfaction with life. It was an inside thing. Like, I truly, genuinely believed there was no hole I needed to fill. There was no missing piece, right? Like, I was not needing to be in a relationship. I felt really good in my life, and a relationship felt like fun. It felt interesting. It felt like a bonus, mm-hmm. which is not often where I see us getting into relationships after spousal loss, but I did get myself there. And that's why I think it's been such an easier experience for me. Because I did, you know, when I started dating, I connected with somebody pretty instantly, and we've been together since, and we live together now. He's not a widower. He's divorced. So he understands what it's like to have to go through all of that. But no, he doesn't really understand grief in terms of spousal loss. His sister did die by suicide. And so he's been through a significant loss. But what was important for me is not that somebody had had a similar life experience, but that they understood that, you know, grief is always going to be a part of my life. I did not choose to leave Hugo, right? It happened, and I never wanted it to happen. And so he is still in my heart. There will always be a very important space there. And I will always tell stories about him. Mm-hmm. I will keep his memory alive, you know, and if I just decided I'm not going to date somebody who's not okay with that, right? Mm-hmm. If they aren't confident enough in themselves to let me have my own emotional experience and not make it mean anything about them, then they just aren't the person for me. And I think I just happened to find that pretty early. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Also, I had a podcast by the time I started dating. So he like listened to my podcast, which I highly recommend, because then you don't really have to explain all of that stuff. It's just right out right. there.
Yeah.
You know, and he kind of already knew like my backstory and what I do for a living. And
yeah. Like,
he kind of was already on board.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
How long did it take you to find a community where you found other people that experienced something like that?
Can I be honest? I didn't find one. I created one.
Wow.
Honestly, that's what happened. I searched online, and everything I found was just, I couldn't relate. They were either older than me to a point where I just didn't feel like I belonged, or they didn't seem to want to live life again. You know, there's just a lot of like, ain't it awful? And that's one of the reasons that I ultimately ended up deciding to do the work that I do, is because I had such a hard time finding that. I think the first time I really felt that sense of community wasn't actually with widows. It was with other life coaches who kind of saw the world like I did.
Yeah.
And then, you know, since then, that's one of my favorite things about the coaching program that I have, is that that's what I feel like we have created. And I'm so glad they have it. I wish I had,
yeah,
you know, earlier, but I'm so glad that they have it.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing.
And I get to be in there. Mm-hmm.
So I'd imagine a lot of people, like kind of what you said earlier, people come to you for all kinds of different grief. Mm-hmm. What have you found, like the grief that somebody experiences maybe through a divorce, or maybe like a betrayal trauma or something where the person is still alive, but it's like the mm-hmm. death of a relationship or the idea of somebody? Could you just share anything about that kind of grief, or what can help with that?
Yeah. Well, let me tell you what I think doesn't help, which is comparing in a despairing way. I think comparison can be helpful if we use it for ourselves. So if we're like, okay, she's had a really hard loss and she's figured out how to support herself, so maybe I can too. Like, we use it to help ourselves. Yeah. But what I find a lot of times is, you know, people use it to isolate, not on purpose, but, you know, nobody understands because, like, you know, this grief is so different, therefore I'm alone. Which is not helpful. And it's just so nuanced and so unique, right? What I said about it being like a fingerprint, it really is that way. So you might not even label it as grief, and yet it is grief, right? Anytime we have something that we expected it to go one way and it didn't go that way, but we wanted it to, right? And that's grief. So that can be a betrayal in a relationship you're still in. Mm-hmm. That can be you lost a bunch of weight and thought you were going to love your body, and now you realize you don't. That's grief, right? I have a good coach friend who, she told me that she cried for 2 weeks straight after she made $1 million as a coach, because she realized, oh, I'm still human. This is still my life. Like, this did not solve all my problems, right? But she had so convinced herself that success in her business would somehow mean less pain in her life, and it didn't.
Yeah.
Right. I have a friend who coaches on, well, she has all kinds of coaching, but specifically traumatic stuff. And her husband had an addiction to porn, and, you know, that felt like a betrayal in going through it. Right. So there's just so many different types of grief experiences that we can have. And I think if we can just meet ourselves where we are without trying to make our grief harder than someone else's or easier than someone else's, and just acknowledge, hey, this is what it's like for me right now, and how do I support myself? So much more helpful.
Yeah. I think it's hard to find that balance between, like, nobody understands and I feel alone in it, but also, like you mentioned, when you were trying to connect with people initially and felt like you weren't finding your community, that is also a feeling that can be frustrating. It is tough to find that middle ground.
I do think the internet has, I mean, that was 7 years ago, so I do think that, you know, if you just decide, I'm not going to quit until I find or create my community, I do think you will find it.
Yeah.
Sometimes I wonder, how much of my inability to find that community was because I had decided it wasn't out there?
Mm.
You know?
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Can't really go back and actually figure that out. But I do think the filtering system in our brain is super powerful, and it does show us what we are looking for, whether it's a conscious choice to look for it or not. So I will find my people, or I will create my community, is probably a more powerful way to look at it if I could go back in time.
100%.
Yeah.
I'm definitely applying that to my life for sure right now. The first 2 years of my mom having dementia, I think I had been subconsciously telling myself that I did not want to find some sort of support group because I didn't want to think about it more than I already was. I thought that it would actually be harder and more draining. And then in the past month or two, it's the first time I've started to really, like, actively look for them. Mm-hmm. And I'm doing my first meeting with one next week. And so I'm interested to see, and I'm just going to try and keep an open mind. But you mentioned that you felt like a lot of people were older than you who were going through it. And that has been my experience so far, is that a lot of people who lose a parent to dementia, it's like, it's a much older person. And she just happens to have a kind that tends to hit people much younger. So she's 70. But I'm kind of in a place where I feel like, even if it's not like the perfect, like whatever I could think of in my mind is like the perfect community, I feel like it will be better than what I've been doing, which is to not really get to connect with anybody about it.
Yeah. And I hope you'll give yourself a chance to take breaks from that too, right? Like, decide as you go what feels good to me right now, and let that answer ebb and flow over time. Because at some point it might feel like you just really need a break, and that being constantly exposed to it is actually not helping you.
Yeah.
And then you can pause.
Yeah.
Is there anything that you find to be helpful when it comes to, like, indecision or decision fatigue when you're in, like, the fog of grief? Like, there's some things I'm going through where I wish I could disclose, but I feel like I'm in a grief period where I'm, like, just numb to everything, and just, I seem to not give a shit about anything right now. And it's making it hard to make decisions or get clear on what I actually want in my life in a lot of facets. I'm like, oh my God, how am I going to be in, like, this weird fog where I feel like I'm having a hard time even knowing what I want to do?
Yeah. Yeah, I do think it's a common issue. And the most common advice that I hear, which kind of I don't like very much a lot, actually, is don't make any big decisions in the first year. But also, I get why people say that. So I think if you can pull back and ask yourself, like, would it be more useful to give myself some space to not make this decision right now? And the answer feels like yes, then that's okay. Sometimes, though, there are decisions that have deadlines or decisions that we want to make. And the last thing we need is to tell ourselves that because of grief fog or because of grief that we can't make those decisions, right? That we're incapable or somehow diminished. I don't think that's helpful either. So in that case, I think a couple of things can help. One is, can you, if it feels good to you, consider like a little board of directors, right? Like, who is like your squad of people who love you, know you, care about your best interests? They have never steered you wrong. You believe that they, you know, have your best interest in mind. Can you ask those people to be your sounding board, right? Like a little decision-making group. I think that can be super helpful. And then the other thing that I think can be helpful is trying to figure out, am I struggling to make this decision because I don't have the information that I need? Sometimes it's a lack of information. I need more information. Sometimes we actually do have the information, but we keep telling ourselves that we need more information. But we actually do have the information. We just don't have confidence, right? We don't have the belief required. So is it like an information problem? And maybe it could be a skill problem too. Maybe, you know, you have the information, but like if it's a financial decision and it's about investments and you don't have, you know, a lot of skill as it relates to investing, maybe it's a skill thing and you need to reach out to somebody who has the skills that you don't have, even if you have all the information. But it's not one of those two things, then it's probably potentially a belief problem. Like, do I believe I'm capable of making this decision? You know, do I believe I'm capable of handling whatever implications might happen because I make this decision? And if you can isolate it into one of those areas, I think it becomes less nebulous and a little more tangible, right? And then we can solve for that part of it. I can solve for information, I can solve for skill, or I can solve for belief.
Makes a lot of sense. I think I'm in needing more information mode currently. I think that's what it is. And it feels like I'm in this weird limbo of like, I don't know. I don't know I'm such a type A person. I'm usually very much know what my life is going to look like in the next 3 months, 6 months, whatever, you know. I'm a planner, and right now I'm finding it hard to plan until I have more information, which will probably take, you know, 6 to 12 months, I'd imagine. Yeah. So it's like a weird.
And then some people, points at self, can get have been known to get to hide behind either I need more information, right? Like, so some people might be telling themselves they need more information, but when they actually look at the information they have, they realize, oh, actually, this is just the part where I'm scared. This is the part where I don't believe I can handle it, or don't, you know? And so our brain can trick us into thinking that it's an information problem. Doesn't sound like that's the case with you, but I just say that as a cautionary.
Oh, it could be.
because I've done it so many times. I'm pretty honest with myself about it.
Oh, that's so interesting. That makes a lot of sense too.
I have one more question for you.
Yeah.
Did you, either when you were in your acute time or even now, find yourself feeling self-conscious and talking about your feelings or your experience with people around you because you were worried you were being like a bummer or a burden? And did you navigate that?
Yes. So that is definitely why I think I found so much respite in the therapist's office, because I didn't believe she was judging me and I didn't believe I had to impress her. But I will tell you, so many of the problems that people bring to me as someone who works in grief are related to and built on the idea that feelings are problems, right? We live in a culture that says you should be happy. And if you're not happy, you're doing it wrong. Right. And so that's why we get so uncomfortable around people who are in grief. That's why we say all the minimizing things that we say, oh, they're in a better place and at least they're no longer suffering and you're young and you'll find someone else. And, you know, don't worry, God has a plan. That's why we say these things, is because we don't know how to be okay when other people aren't.
Yeah.
And then from the other perspective, right? Like what you're talking about is the same thing. We're so worried they won't be okay, and that they have no capacity to be with us as we are. We try to be chameleons so that they aren't uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And so then we answer with fine. Right?
Okay. Yeah.
I'm okay. Or we soften it a little.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm okay. Given the circumstances. Like, and so if we could just switch from people who are having feelings are broken and need to be fixed to people who are having feelings just want to be witnessed, right? They just want us to be there. Then it would get easier to be with people who are in grief. And then those of us who are in grief, it would be easier to be with others.
Yeah. That's
we'll get there.
Well put. Yeah.
We will. That's why conversations like this really matter.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. This has been so good.
Yeah. This episode is like
therapeutic.
Yeah. I feel like every way I want to describe this episode is not enough in words, but I feel like it is so invaluable for our listeners and really anybody.
Yeah.
So
glad.
Yeah.
Cannot thank you enough for talking to our listeners and for talking to me personally, because I mean, obviously need it.
My pleasure.
Yeah. Thank you, Krista. What would you like to leave people with? And then where can people find you, your work, your podcast, all that good stuff?
Yeah. So come listen to the Widowed Mom podcast, even if you're not a widow. If you just want to learn about grief and you want to learn about how to help people who are grieving or how to be prepared for a loss, I just invite you to come and listen. There are some episodes specific to, like, you know, one's called For Those Who Love Us. So if you have someone who is struggling and you want to be of better support, go check out that episode. Mm. There's a very early one called The Myths of Grief that might be really powerful. You know, just come listen. And you can find me at coachingwithkrista.com, and all my socials are all there as well.
Incredible. Thank you for sharing your story and for all of your help and wisdom.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, truly.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Oh
boy. I need a very long nap after that one just to process and rest.
Yeah, that was a heavy one. And
yeah.
Man. She is so strong. It's like you hear stories like that and you just are like, how does this person, like, how do they do it? And they do. And it's the most inspiring thing in the world.
Yeah. Yeah. How you go on after a big loss is like,
I mean,
pretty powerful. Yeah. And, man, I really wish I could talk more about certain things that I've been going through and realizations I've had, but, you know, just, this is just, I don't know, grief for me right now looks like what she was saying, like, I look like I'm fine. You know, if you look at me, you're like, oh, you look like you're doing okay. But I am so all over the place inside, sad, depressed, confused. And they agree.
I'm so sorry.
Oh, guys, no, it's fine.
It's been a dog heavy podcast today.
It is.
We cannot keep our dogs. Right. Come here.
This is real life though. And like, you know, I feel like sometimes with a grief or loss or something, it like brings up all of your past griefs and losses. Like for me, I feel like, I don't know if they call it complex trauma or something. It's like
complex
something,
PTSD.
Yeah. Like something I'm going through. It's bringing up a lot of stuff from childhood and a lot of things where things were not as they seemed, or there was betrayal going on, or there was, you know, something going on behind the scenes, you know?
Right.
And yeah, it's really weird when it's like, not, it doesn't feel like an isolated incident in your life. It feels like a pattern of things that you've experienced. And then you really feel like, what's the fucking point if this stuff is just going to kind of keep happening to me in some way, where, you know, what's the point of trying to make a really great life for yourself? Because
I can't trust myself to make the right decisions, or I can't trust that things are going to be good, you know, and that's just in my head what's going on. It doesn't mean that it's like the reality of the situation, but yeah, it's really weird how it can just feel different and look different for everybody depending on what's going on.
Yeah, I think the things you're going through, I hope you know that you will get to a place again where you feel like you can trust yourself again. Right. It just feels probably hard to see that right now, but I know you will.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
And how are you? How are you feeling at this moment?
So much of what you said I relate to, and what she said I relate to, where it's like from the outside, I think I look really functional. And, you know, even on like Instagram, it looks like things are going really well. And like, I look really happy. And honestly, there are a lot of times throughout the day that I feel really happy. But the grief I feel with my mom is so pervasive and strong that it's like all the things she was talking about that are restorative activities. It's so unfortunate that even when I'm doing a restorative activity and feeling genuine happiness, there is a piece of me that is feeling guilt to feel happy for any moment of time while my mom is going through this disease. So it's, man, it's the hardest. It is nonstop. Yeah. I feel so fucking burnt out of grieving. I'm so tired of feeling sad. And there is like really no cure for that, unfortunately. Like I can't love my mom less. I love her the huge amount that I do. So like what is happening to her and then what's happening to me because of it, it's like that doesn't, I can't make that be less of a big deal.
Right.
It just is. So, right. Yeah, I'm just tired. It's been a really long thing. So that's kind of, I mean, you guys heard on the podcast, I'm struggling a lot of the time, but I wanted to also take this time. I know I've said thank you before on the podcast for when people have written in to say that they are going through or have gone through a family member having dementia. And I got a couple more recently from you guys. And I just want you to know it is the greatest feeling of connection and community when a lot of the time I don't feel like I have it. And I can't thank you enough for taking the time to share your experiences with me and your feelings. And just please know that it means the world to me. So thank you.
Yeah. Oh, that's really nice that people are doing that.
Yeah.
Any plug segment stuff going on?
Yeah. So again, it's like this life is so weird. You can have amazing things happening and also right. The worst things happening. So over the weekend, it's technically September right now when we're recording, so this will come out much later, but I broke the record for ticket sales at the Comedy Fort in Fort Collins, Colorado. And
that's awesome.
Thank you. And my special, The Hustler, hit 2 million views. So it was like awesome. a really cool week in terms of just like career accomplishment stuff. But I will say not to constantly be saying sad things, but I will say that as I was having these cool accomplishments this past week, I also, you have like a lot of sadness come up with it because you're like, I wish I could tell my mom and have her be excited and have her understand what I'm saying.
Right.
But you know, I did tell her on the phone, but it was like, she wasn't really responsive to it. I don't know that she fully understood what I was saying. But I really miss that because my mom used to be my biggest cheerleader. And so it's left such a massive hole in my life, but she's also still alive. It's like the most psychologically fucked up thing. Like your brain is not prepared or programmed to know how to deal with that. And, right. Yeah, it's a lot. Just hanging on, just trying to not lose my fucking mind every day.
Right. But, right.
Yeah. Do you have a segment?
I had one of my best friends visit me last weekend for a long weekend, and it was very nice to see her. And we did some nice dinners. We walked around. We went to the Magic Castle as well. Yeah. Shout out to, I know, it's so fun. Big shout out to my buddy Loro for crushing his magic show. Really highly recommend, seeing him anytime. Loro Castillo, anytime that he's performing there. And got a new tattoo as well. We just did a plethora.
You did?
Things.
You didn't tell me that.
I know. I didn't think about it. We did. We crammed a lot in.
What's your tattoo?
It's just a little. Well, we're both Aries, so we both got a little elemental, or what do you call it? Little element fire sign. It's just a little triangle on my ankle. Basic bitch tattoo, but we love it.
I love it. Those are so cute.
Yeah. So yeah, it was great seeing Molly, and we went to a beautiful dinner on the beach. I took her to one of my favorite restaurants, Nick's on Beverly in West Hollywood. If you have a chance to go, you should. What else? Just walked around, drank tea, had good food. It just was good. You know, it was a good visit for the soul. Very healing. And it's like what you said. It's like you could have that amazing time, and then, you know, it feels like a great escape. And then it's kind of like back to this feeling of feeling kind of off, you know? Yeah. So yeah, that was really lovely. And then, you know, I'm at a place right now where I am trying to figure out how to give myself a break from certain things, a break from my business, maybe going away for a little bit. I found this really, have you heard about this platform, Workaway? Uh-uh. Workaway.com? Oh my God. It's like a cultural exchange platform. They've been around for like 20 years or something.
Oh, wow.
Where you basically, it's like for travelers, like if you want to travel somewhere, you would stay with somebody for free, and then they provide meals, and you do a little bit of work, like, you know, in their home or on their farm or whatever.
Okay.
And so it's kind of like an exchange, but then it's a way that people are kind of like traveling for free or cheap. And then there's some paid opportunities there, but I'm like, oh my gosh. So I'm currently looking for just some things in my local community to where I could go and like stay on like a homestead for a little bit. You know, that kind of thing, where I can learn about sustainable living and tiny homes and growing food. 'Cause it's something I've always had an interest in.
Yeah.
And I just didn't know something like that existed. So I am like really looking for kind of a change of pace in my life. So I'll keep y'all posted on whatever that ends up being. We have an iTunes review of the episode. This is from Lex Wheel. It says, love and obsessed, hashtag girls rule. Listen for the first time and I'm hooked. I love the girls and think they're hilarious and so relatable. 5 stars all around.
Oh.
Lex, thank you so much for taking the time to do that. Really appreciate that. Yeah, if you want to leave a review, it'll probably get read on like next episode. You know,
try to get all caught up.
So
yeah,
we get to them pretty fast. So would love to, you know, see how you're feeling about the show. And then also, I think this was a helpster's topic choice for grief. I'm not really sure. So if you want to submit topics for that, you know, get covered on the podcast, if you want to submit quotes that get on the podcast, shout outs, recommendations, you can go to patreon.com/selfhelpless for that as well. And we'd love to have you over there.
Yes. All right, guys. We hope you're doing well. If you're going through some shit, just please take good care of yourself. I'm mostly saying that for myself to hear as well.
Yep.
But yeah, we love you guys. And we hope you're having an awesome week. And we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah. Love you guys. Bye.
Love you guys. Bye.
Thank you for tuning in to the Self Helpless Podcast. You can find our Patreon community, merch, and our individual work at selfhelplesspodcast.com.
We'd be thrilled if you shared this episode with a friend, left an iTunes review, or feel free to post it on your Instagram and tag @selfhelplesspodcast. Thanks, guys.
Maybe I'm self-helpless. Maybe I'm self-helpless. Maybe I'm self-helpless. Maybe we are all self-helpless.